Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us This Week in America. One reviewer calls it the most insightful and actionable book I have read this year. The book, Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success, by three-time Amazon bestselling author Jack Quarles, our guest in the program. His bestsellers, How Smart Companies Save Money, and along with Ian Altman, Same Side Selling, and now, Expensive Sentences. Jack is an international trainer, speaker, consultant who has helped companies save tens of millions of dollars, 2 decades in the field of expense management, the co-founder of multiple startups, currently serving on the boards of 2 international nonprofits, degrees from Yale University and Northwestern's Kellogg School of Business, author of Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. Back with us on This Week in America, Jack Quarles. Jack, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the program.
Rick, thanks for having me back. I enjoyed it so much when we talked last time. Glad to give it another go.
And we will invite people to go to YouTube, go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and you can listen and watch the last program we did with Jack. I really love the concept of the book. I love what you're talking about. And you say in the beginning, decision after decision is based not on fact or process, but on simple, pithy phrases, sort of cliched wisdom, that often are highly misleading. And I want to use an example, and then you can tell me why this falls in that category. We need to do it yesterday. We hear that in family situations. We hear that in business situations. And that seems to make sense because we heard it so long, we think that it makes sense. We don't question it. Talk about why that, without really going behind the curtain and looking at that, that can cost you money, a lot of money.
It's the perceived urgency, our time famine, our lack of time. And sometimes there is some reality to that. A lot of times we magnify that. We make that problem worse than it has to be. And yet, I think in our society, there are a lot of things that are not acceptable. But one thing that seems to be acceptable, in fact, celebrated, is being busy, having too much to do, having a plate that's too full. That's something that is kind of a status symbol for many of us in circles. So this creeps in, and it really doesn't set off alarms. It's something that we say and we accept. Gosh, I'm so swamped. I got to do that yesterday. We need it. It's urgent. Is it really? That's the question. And so what I guide people to do in the book and what I can encourage right now is simply to, you know, tease that out a little bit more. Instead of accepting that the first time because your brain hears that and says, yes, that works. We're too busy or we needed it yesterday. Just pause and reflect on that and say, well, why is that? What's the actual cost if we delay? Now, we said we needed it yesterday, but of course we didn't need it yesterday because we didn't have it yesterday. And Where are we today? What's the real cost that's bringing? And then what's the possible benefit of delaying and making perhaps a better decision or finding a better option?
And I would think if you're talking to a vendor and you're saying, and we need it yesterday, maybe trying to reinforce what you talked about, this the sort of acceptability we want, that we're so busy, we need this like right away. We've got so many plates, things on our plate, we need to get this right away. But that, I would think, if I'm the vendor, I'm thinking, I don't have to really worry a whole lot about price. They're really worried about how quickly I can turn this around.
Boy, isn't that the truth? And how often do we rush into a purchase and say, well, gosh, looking back, I would have done things a little bit differently.
Yes.
I wish I'd investigated that a little bit more. I wish I'd found some more options, or even as simple as I wish I just negotiated on the price a little bit more. It's very rare that we look back on something that we did urgently and think, boy, I'm so glad that I did that urgently, right? Now, there is a value in being decisive, but again, when we rush decisions, we usually don't make good decisions. And that is true for any area of life, virtually. It's certainly true in business. Now, to take that a little further, Rick, what you said, this perceived urgency is something that, of course, many salespeople and marketing pros try to feed. They say, gosh, you have to have it yesterday. What's going on? You know, you've lost it. You're missing it. This fear of missing out, this fear of bad things happening because you don't have my solution. You haven't bought it yet. You haven't implemented it yet. And that's a very common sales tactic, one that we should train ourselves to guard against.
The book we're talking about is Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. Jack Quarles is the author and our guest on This Week in America. Information on the book at expensivesentences.com, or you can go to jackquarles.com. thisweekinamerica.com as well. That's Q-U-A-R-L-E-S. Or you can go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and link on directly to Jack's website. The book is available, of course, wherever books are sold around the country. You talk a lot, and it really gets you thinking on this, that language reflects our beliefs. Mm. Talk about our own personal perception and certainly biases leading us into believe and fall for some of these expensive sentences. Is there a correlation?
There really is, and it's interesting. I've learned a good bit more about how our brain works and how we process information and make decisions. And our brains are built to create patterns. So when you're an infant, you know, infants in the womb, as soon as they hear their mom's voice, they can be comforted by that because they've already learned to associate that voice with warmth, with safety, with food. So that's a good thing because that brain then doesn't have to process and figure it out every time. It just takes a shortcut. Mom's voice, I'm okay. All right. Now we apply that to everything. And we say, well, that's a chair. We don't have to think, what's that going to do? Is it going to fly away? Is it going to be hot to the touch? You know, we see it, we kind of relate it to some form in our mind, and that helps us be efficient. This is the key thing to realize. Our brains are built for efficiency. Our brains are not rational first. They can be rational, but we will be efficient. So how does this relate to what we're talking about now? I think in the same way we see item and we say, well, that's a pencil, that's a chair, that's a bird. We see a situation and we want to quickly put a label on it in the same sort of way. Now, these little devices of language saying things like you get what you pay for, or it's too late to turn back now, or we're too swamped to deal with that. These are things that are burned into our mind and they're very familiar. And so a set of circumstances kind of slides into that rut in our brain and we stick there. But that doesn't mean that's the actual truth of the situation. So we really want to be aware of this. This is really a type of bias, just as you said. We're biased to assume that certain things are a certain way. We bring our biases to situations as well. And so just being aware of that can help us to unpack that and not let those biases drive us more than we want them to.
And you talk in the book, and this really stuck with me after we did the first program, when you limit options, you limit opportunities. And when we fall for one of these at face value, one of these cliched pieces of wisdom that you talk about, we really are limiting our options, aren't we?
We are. And Rick, this is where it's so important, I think, for those of us that not just in a business sense or financially even, but really as we relate to others, people in our family and our friends who go through difficult situations. And so often people get in a pattern or a mindset where they feel like, well, I don't have any options. Now, maybe it's somebody who's in a bad relationship and feel like they're stuck in that relationship. Maybe it's somebody who's in the wrong job and who feels very disheartened in that job, but feels like they're stuck there because they did some training for that job or they've been in that job for some period of time. And we're very prone for a lot of reasons to falling into that and to limiting our own options. So one of the best things that we can do for others is to help them see that they're not as stuck as they often think they are. And there are lots of ways to do this, but simply pausing and going a little deeper on that simple question. So when somebody says, well, look, I've got to stay in this job. I've been doing it for 8 years, or I can't switch now. People say, if I go to med school, I'll be 35 by the time I'm done. And so the classic question is, well, how old will you be at that period of time if you don't go to med school? And you know, really flesh out the alternatives to help them see, okay, maybe I do have more options than I realized.
Jack Worls, our guest on the program. The book is Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. The website is expensivesentences.com or jackquarles.com. You can get there by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back to bias, because as I'm reading this, in my own life, I can make an association with what you're talking about. And I guess bias, by definition, sort of happens in subliminally, and we really don't know that it's happening. And you talk about confirmation bias. Explain that, because this is something that I find in reading that probably drives a lot more of our decisions than we think, and we're really not looking at the situation objectively if we have that built-in bias.
This applies in so many ways, and it's such a powerful one. I'm glad you brought it up, because I think this is the one that we really should be aware of, maybe even more than the others. Now, one form of this is simply the first impression, right? So, Rick, I meet you at a party, and you seem like a nice person. And then I go home and I say, well, Rick's a nice guy. And again, my brain doesn't really want to challenge that first impression. In fact, I'll do everything I can to fit any data that comes in later into that first impression rather than go and rework that, because it's a lot of energy to rework that in my brain. Now, that's one place. And if I'm talking to you, Rick, that would be fine for that to be the first impression. However, we apply that judgment in other ways. So let's say we're buying something in the office, right? And some salesperson comes in and they make a good first impression. Or maybe they make a poor first impression. What I try to teach my clients is first impressions are just that, and they can often be misleading. You don't want to make a multi-million dollar decision based on the fact that some salesperson had a bad first meeting or came late to your meeting. What you really want to do is take all the data and evaluate that. So that's one thing to do. Now, we do this as well personally, and one of the most notorious ways is those of us that consume news media. And we say, well, I'm going to that site because that is the one that I agree with. Or we say, well, I'm going to take in this information that already agrees with my statement. Even more granular than that, we're drawn to headlines that resonate because they have some sort of truth. So if a headline sounds like something I already agree with, I'll read it.
Yes.
Now, I don't know, that might make me feel better, but that doesn't really educate me more. That doesn't give me a more broad view of the world. And so what the simple tactics to try to work against your own confirmation bias is to go out of your way to intentionally seek things of a different perspective. And you can do this in a lot of different ways. You can do this as it relates to relationships and people. You can do this as it relates to news and the outside world. And you can do it as it relates to decisions. So my first impression is, well, whatever it is, I should keep my health club membership because I really like the health club. Well, maybe I should go and investigate other health clubs. Maybe I should see, well, what would life be like if I drove to this one instead of that one? Maybe I should see, well, what are the prices at these other ones? So that's not a very, it's not a deep life decision, but we make these decisions every day, and some are bigger than others. We don't want to make them simply based on the motion that we're going in or our inertia. What we want to do is look around and make good decisions based on the reality and our true options.
And consuming news, so often we find ourselves, I do at least, looking for affirmation rather than information. And you sort of catch yourself that, wait a minute, I'm looking for somebody to say what I think. And then I think these people are pretty bright because they just reflected what I thought. The book we're talking about is Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. Jack Quarles, the author, and our guest back on This Week in America. Time running by so quickly, and I'm going to throw out something else that we hear all the time. People in business will say this, the customer is always right. And we're thinking, we have to listen to the customer. The customer is always right, just about put Lego out of business. Talk about that story, because they tried to reflect what they thought the customer wanted, and boy, they just about lost an iconic business.
That's a great one. We all know Lego. I played with a lot of Legos growing up.
Yes.
And Lego had it as an illustrious history. However, there was a time, and I recount this in the book, where they encountered a period where they were stagnating. And what they found was they went out and they found all these kids. They did surveys and said to children, well, what kind of toys do you like? And a lot of children didn't like building with blocks. They liked these pre-made toys, or they liked cartoons with cartoon tie-ins and toys that were based on those. And so Lego kind of followed the masses. They said, well, we're going to try to make all these different lines of toys that, that cater to these things that we're learning from the marketplace. Now, what happened was a few things. They had a lot of lines that failed because they were not really competitive with the other toys that were closer to the ones that they were trying to emulate. And then what they also did was they sort of took their own market share, because they would literally be displacing shelf space for other Lego kits with some of these other toys. What they finally decided was, hey, we've got a great brick. We've got a great building brick. And in terms of a toy that's a building brick, it's probably the best in the world. So let's focus on that. And we can do more with that. We can take our customer input to some degree. But there are two ways, and I'm going to leave your listeners with this, two ways specifically that customers lead us the wrong way, and customers are often wrong. And one is when they take us away from our strategic plan. So a customer might want something, but that might not be what I want to serve or where I'm going with my business. And then the second one simply is when customers are too expensive to take care of. If they're asking for Ritz-Carlton level service, but my business model is a Holiday Inn Express, I can't give them that service and keep my model. So I have to know what my model is and find the right customers. If you really love that phrase, the customer's always right, then just take it another step and say, well, the customer's always right, but this customer might be right for somebody else, one of my competitors, rather than for
exactly.
me.
Exactly. Let him put them out of business instead of putting me out of business as I'm trying to go in the direction they want. A couple minutes left in the program. I'm going to follow up on that with something you just touched on. One of the cliches, the expensive sentences, great service is always worth paying for. We hear that where the product may be the same, but if I ever have a problem, I know I can get a hold of this person and they're going to come service it. Talk about that, because on the surface it sounds good. If you pick it apart, maybe not so much.
I hear this all the time with my clients, and I say, well, I think this is an area, this vendor or this consultant or this company, where you can probably save some money. And they say, well, look, I'm not going to switch for 10% because I really value this relationship. And I say, okay, well, that's fine. But what I want to do is two things. I want to define the way you value that relationship and define what that value is. I also challenge that 10%, because maybe you think you could save 10%, but if we go out to the marketplace, we might find that you could save a lot more than that. So you can pay a premium. It's fine to choose to pay a premium. You might like to go see a concert of your favorite artist, go see Elton John and pay, you know, $300 for that ticket. That's fine. You might buy a bottle of wine that you really enjoy, and that's fine. That's kind of your personal taste. When it comes to the team or the market, I advise my clients to do two things regarding a premium. Again, you can pay a premium, but first, know what the premium is. That is, go out to the marketplace, get some competitive bids, get it in writing, and get it, you know, within the next last 2 or 3 months so you know it's fresh. Then you'll actually know what you're paying that's extra. And then secondly, define what that premium is for. So you say, well, they've got great service. Okay, what does that mean? Does that mean that they deliver on time and we don't have to worry about, you know, getting late fees or anything like that? Well, that's worth something. Does that mean that if there's an error in the order, they fix it right away? Well, that's worth something. So let's kind of, you know, suss that out and say, what is it actually worth? Or if you say, well, we've got a great relationship with them, we trust them. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that they know a lot about your institution so you can spin up more efficiently? Well, that's good. That's worth something. So my point here is define it. Identify those items that that compose a good service and try to put some sort of range of dollar value on that.
The book is Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. The author is Jack Quarles, back with us on This Week in America. The book is available all across the country, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the bookstores. You can go to his website, expensivesentences.com or jackquarles.com, or go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and we will direct link you to Jack's website.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Everybody wants cheap airfare, but where do you find it? You call low-cost airlines. Their prices are direct from the airlines, and they're so low you can't find these fares published anywhere. They specialize in cheap flights, discount hotel rooms, cheap car rental rates, and great package deals anywhere around the world. Wherever you want to go, they can help you get there cheaply and with a best price guarantee. If you want the lowest prices on your airline tickets or other travel services, call now. That's right, call. That's the only way to get these rates. Experts are standing by 24/7 to get you the cheapest airfare and hotel rates available. So don't wait. Call right now for the lowest travel prices anywhere and for great last-minute travel deals, too. Call right now. Operators are standing by. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. That's 800-298-0306.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. They want your money, and guess what? They can legally take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash and we're going to take it from you. So what do? Fight back by letting our team of experts at the Tax Helpline work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws and will fight to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket.
800-932-1597. 800-932-1597. 800-932-1597. That's 800-932-1597.